walking into the open. Yes, this morning is late, but I wasn't being angry when you had these meetings. Yes, I never like to push my way in, because
oh, I see the kind of.
I know that you're really, well, in quite rightly, interested in certain people who, well, can put some weight and influence in these recordings of yours, but who's the many of us here that, well, it's just the ordinary people. You should well know this is a subject which affects every human being, whether they're high up or whether they're low in this scale of life, you might say.
Yes.
Because I'm just an ordinary person. And, I suppose what I have to say would be a very real weight to most people. That is, you might listen to your records, but anyway, I'm very interested and I always stand here listening, taking interest in what goes on. And I know as you go around and about and you play these things to people, it gives a lot of interest and comfort to people, I'm sure.
Yes, it is.
Because I never had no truck with this myself when I was on your side. Well, as a matter of fact, I never had any truck with religion as such, except when I was a kid, like most kids. I went to the old Sunday school, learned a few bits and pieces, and never had much sort of influence on me, especially when I, well, when the First World War, when I joined up, got among the boys, and went to the young in the state of things, I'm afraid, what religious, well, convictions, or well, it weren't really convictions, of course, but what religious inclination I might have had was soon knocked out of me. I know that my reactions were anyway, at the time of the First World War. Oh dear, oh dear. I thought, well, if there's a God who'd never permit all this, and as for the church, I thought, well, less said the better. Anyway, I've changed my business then. There's nothing wrong in the sense with the church. Point is, they've got a great truth and they've never known quite how to handle it. Or how to sort of, well, bring it out to the people to give them that sort of realization, might say, and conviction that they should. If you follow the teachings of the Lord, the simple truths that he taught, it entirely doesn't matter. You can't have the sword in one hand and the Bible in the other, can you?
Yeah.
Yeah. A good number of them do. Certainly did in the First World War. Oh, dear, dear. I'm not saying there weren't good men among them, padres and all the rest of it. Sincere lads. Most of them on the younger side, too. And they did some wonderful work in their own way, and I have great respect for them. But, if you really talk about Christ and what he really meant, what he brought you into the world, a wonderful realization of God's purpose, you know, I'd associate that with mass murder. And rather, I'm afraid that put me right off religion forever, that did First World War.
Does maybe have it on him?
Hey?
Maybe have it on him?
Oh, my God, nothing. No, it would.
It would have to have it.
My name's Pritchard.
Pritchard?
Yeah, Alf Pritchard. Don't mean a thing.
Can you give us some idea how you passed over and your reactions?
Hey?
Can you give us some idea of how you passed over and your reactions when you found yourself?
Yeah, I came over during the first lot.
Mm-hmm.
1917 or 18, I'm sure myself, that's some time ago.
Yeah.
What a time that was. Oh dear. Last lot was pretty good, wasn't it? As a matter of fact, since then, as a matter of fact, you know, since I came here, I mean, during the last war, I was helping the lads over, called writers. There's a town people ordered that didn't know what had happened in many cases. They just couldn't realise they was dead. There they were, 1 minute full of life, vitality and youth, shoved in, well, terrible conditions. You know, full of hope, thinking and hoping and praying they'd come through it. Of course, they got 41, and they are. They were over here. Some of them were still under the impression themselves they were still alive. You had a job to make them realize, some of them, that they were really dead. It all happened so quick, and they were blown, you might say, out of one life into the next in a split second, and there they were, as far as they were concerned, still with the same body and still thinking on the old lines and still, in some instances, even carrying on just the same as if they were in their physical body. You see, you can't destroy a man even when you blow him up. He's still the same person, the same instincts, the same thoughts and everything, and he's still carrying on whatever he was doing. In some cases, the death in witness like that, sudden and, I'd say, unexpected, was in war, you never know, but it's a bad thing. I mean, when a man dies in his bed after an illness, there's a gradual sort of change taking place. He's gradually sort of unconsciously, if you like, sort of preparing himself for the new world. He may not realize that in a sense, but it does give him time to adjust himself gradually to the idea that he's going to leave the earth. He begins, in a mental way anyway, to make some change, but this business of war, or accidents even, where people are suddenly flung out of their bodies, is a terrible thing. I don't hold the wars, anything like that. I suppose that's the thing that really gets me, you know, with the church. I suppose I shouldn't be prejudiced, but so many of them, you know, they're sword in one end of the Bible and the other, blessing the flags, blessing the ships, and blessing the guns, and blessing the boys, telling them no, fighting for right, and all the rest of it. Anything that takes life, or anything which is premeditated and organized, mass and murder, is, to my way of thinking, the wickedest of things. And how any Christian as such can uphold it, or support it, or in any way have anything to do with it, it's beyond me. I'm of the firm conviction that if the churches really came out what they know fundamentally is the truth and say that it is wrong and wicked to take life, I don't think there could be wars, quite frankly, because I don't see how there could be. You get all the Catholics and all the Protestants and all the other isms all banding together and saying that it is absolutely wrong and against all the teachings of the church and the teachings of Christ. I don't think it could ever more. I don't see how it could. In any case, when I've seen, as I have, the untold thousands of people that are thrust over there, unprepared, it's the most ghastly thing. Actually, I wish I could do something about it. That's why I feel so drawn to these sort of meetings, in the hope that we might get a bit of enlightenment and truth, realization, we might say, through to people. There's a real reason why I'll come. Were you going to say something, what did you
do? Well, I was going to ask you, Mr. Pritchard, exactly what your reactions were when you found yourself on the other side. You see, you were flung over suddenly, weren't you?
Me? Yeah. One moment I was alive. I always remember it so well. We'd been under a heavy bombardment practically all day. And I thought to myself, the time we come through this lodge, we'd be lucky, you know. And then we were, early morning, we were given the command to go over the top. Well, I thought, this is it, boy, you know. Well, I come out of this lot, I've been bad enough, but lucky. Anyway, I mean, I must admit that all I've got to really get myself over the top. Anyway, I don't mind even going into a second, but all I know is that I was running forward. And I still keep running forward. And the funny part about it is, some of the Germans were coming towards me, and they rushed past me and they didn't see me. I thought, well, that's a funny attitude. All I remember was feeling in a pretty bad state, you know, sweating. Oh, I don't know, this is it, you know. And they're still attacking me or in any way sort of taking any interest in me. They were rushing past me. Oh, good Lord, I can't make this hurt. They took quite a while to sort of realize what had happened. In fact, it was some time, I think, before I realized what happened. I went on. All I can remember is running and running. I thought, well, they're not going to see me. I'm certainly not going to bother about them. I'm going to try and get in a little cubby hole somewhere and get out of it. And all I remember is getting into a hole in the ground and created by a bomb, I suppose, sometime. Anyway, one knows I've got this hole and I just crouched down and thought, well, I'll wait till this shindy's over and hope for the best. I might get taken prisoner, who knows. I was just lying there thinking to myself, well, so funny, how'd you do? They didn't see me. They must have seen me. The element might pass me. And I started to think about it. Well, no, I'm lucky. And who I've been going on, I must have been. Anyway, I must have fallen asleep or something, because the next thing I know was that at the time it was, I remember seeing a bright light in front of me. It was just as I woke up, and there was a pretty bright light. I couldn't make this out at all, because it was the sort of light I'd never seen before. It was just as if the whole place was illuminated. It was so dazzling that for the moment I could sort of hardly look at it. I had to keep sort of closing my eyes and having a look. I thought, well, I don't know, some sort of trick of the light or something. I got a bit of a window, you know, I didn't know what to think. And all of a sudden, it was just as if I saw of an outline, a shape or a figure appear. And I kept looking and I thought, well, I wasn't sure whether it was human or what it was. It was an outline of the being and it was fully living, lost to him. And gradually it seemed to take shape. And I was in absolute sweat because eventually I could see that it was an old friend of mine who I knew it. Been killed some months before, named Smart, Billy Smart, we used to call him, old Bill. He was looking at me, and I was looking at him, and it was, I don't know how to explain this, it was as if somehow there was a sort of merging, I suppose, in some way or other, of him and me. That's peculiar, I can't explain this. Anyway, all I know is that I felt myself getting up, and that struck me as odd, and I should sort of be conscious of myself getting up in a strange sort of way. I thought, well, there's me been lying here probably all night, all day and night. I ought to be feeling stiff and awkward and uncomfortable, but I didn't. And I felt as light as a feather. I thought, well, something's got to me. Yeah, perhaps I got a whack, you know, something, perhaps. I didn't know what to think about it. Anyway, I went towards it as if I was being like a maniac, drawn to it. As I got closer, I could see that he was full of vitality, full of life, wonderful sort of colour in his face. And then all of a sudden, as I got near to him, it dawned on me that he was dead. It's funny, he was my first thought. I didn't think of him being dead, although I must have remembered realising the way he had been killed some months before. Anyway, what I was drawn to him and he smiled at me. And I suppose I must have smiled back. Anyway, he sort of held out his hand and I felt a bit daft in a way because I know it's natural shake hands. It was me in a dugout, a trench, a dugout, whatever you like to call it, cradling of sort of shaking hands with someone who was dead. It sort of put me in a cold sweat. What's going on here? I must be dreaming or something. Anyway, I could hear him speak. He says, all right, he says, none of the way about, you're all right, mate, come on. And it was me putting my hand in, it's just like a kid. I thought, this is damn dumb, he says, something wrong somewhere. Anyway, all I know is I got hold of his hand and suddenly felt a sort of floating sensation. Before I knew where I was, it was just as if I was being lifted up in the air, holding his hand too. I thought, well, this is something, this is, reminds me of something I saw years ago. Peter Pan or something. It was me floating up in the air on his hand. I thought, right, no, this is a fucking thing. This is. There was us sort of floating. I can't say I was doing anything else but floating, just with a free ball for ground, going gradually higher and higher, as if everything gradually was getting further and further away. I could see in the distance there below the battlefield. I could see the guns, the light, the explosions, wars, obviously still going on another while. I don't know, this is the most peculiar thing. This is, and then next thing I think was sort of gradually coming inside what appeared to me to be a big city.
At the same time, I can't make any tale of it. Anyway, how long
spiritual because he's patient. And well, I went in, and there was all sorts of people there, all kinds. But what struck me is I was only dressed much the same as, well, many people that I'd known. And, well, I used to dress up myself in suits, and, you know, that sort of thing. And it all seemed to be very natural. And the funny thing was, at the outside of this place, it was like a sort of temple place or something, I suppose you'd call it. But inside, it all looked very natural, as peculiar. It was not exactly like an hospital, but at the same time, it had an atmosphere of peace and tranquility and all that. And there seemed to be many rooms, apart from the big entrance there. There seemed to be lots of different rooms, but lots of light was coming in. That's another thing I can remember seeing the sun. There seemed to be plenty of light, and big windows, and people sitting around talking. There were tables, chairs, and didn't see any beds. I thought, this is a funny sort of hospital, yet an end hospital, I suppose. Everyone seemed to be quite bright and cheerful and happy, all very natural. Some were talking and others were eating. That's what struck me out of all I've got in my ear. He says, this is some sort of part of it, and I'm sure food would need. So I said, I said, look, they're eating. They said, well, why shouldn't they? I thought, well, God, if you're dead, you don't need to eat. So he says, what you don't realize is that when you come here, you feel it's essential to do certain things, and you feel it's essential to eat and drink and you can. And then it dawned on me, that sounds pretty sensible after all. Because if you put someone in a place where they're out of harmony and things don't go on in the way they like them to go on, then they feel uncomfortable. So it struck me as something in there. What do you think?
Very interesting.
Yes, it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, sat down, went to the table, sat around the boat, so he says, hello, just arrived. I said, yes. So, one of them said to me, had it just come, eh? Only a few hours, isn't it? I said, what? He says, only a few hours. I said, is it? I didn't know. So he said, no, it was as you were coming. So I said, what do you mean, it was as I was coming? Don't even know. He says, well, that's what you think. So I said, well, how could you know me anyway? I don't know you. Not down there, as you call it. So I said, oh, well, we know. He said, we have our scouts out. We have our gangs out, you know, help us. He says, I was helped in the same way. I've only been here a very short time myself, a couple of days, I believe. So I said, oh. So I said, settling in. So he says, oh, yes, yeah, very nice. Much better than what they used to tell us down there, ain't it? So I said, how do you mean? So he says, well, you know what they used to tell us down there about heaven and hell. Last trumpet and all that. Yeah, he says, they got it all wrong. So I said, well, seems like it, didn't it? So he says, yeah, he says, all that business about if you're very good, you go up to the top store, and if you're not so good, you go down to the old cellar. Yeah, he says, they got all that wrong, mate. He says, he'll be ours, just the same as he was, and he's better. Yeah, quite happy. He says, tomorrow, he says, I'm going from here. So I said, well, where are you going? So he says, well, he says, I'm going, he says, to see my grandparents. I says, of course, all this stuck in these big crackers, but I thought, well, I'll better keep in with them, you know, and talk the same sort of language. After all, if I've got to be here, as they say I am, I might as well fit in. I felt in the most peculiar sort of state, but I'm going to have to think about it now. And he says, yeah, I'm going to see my grandparents. So, where are they? He says, well, I've been told, he says, that they're on this plane, as they call it here, but further out. I says, further out? So he says, yes. So I says, well, many miles away. He says, miles? They say you don't have miles here, you don't have distance in the same way as you do on Earth. I ain't got mute yourself just that yet, sis, but I sure no doubt you'll write up your tape. So I says, oh, very nice. I says, who's tape? So he says, my guide. I said, guide. So he says, yes. He says, I didn't even know what such things as guides, you know, that something that I've only just recently learned, but it's a very nice fellow. He was like one of the stewards, I suppose you'd call him. And he's found out a little bit about my background and my people, and he's been given the job of sort of escorting me. He says, by the way, he says, did you notice when you came here how odd it was, how large you felt? So I said, yes, I did notice that. He says, wasn't it funny? He says, that sort of floating feeling, yeah, you know. So I said, yes, it was rather remarkable. I felt a bit peculiar, you know, sort of floating around. It seemed strange. So he says, well, that's the way we're going, I believe. We're not going to walk, he says, and we're sort of going to, I suppose some people call it flying. I don't know whether you call it that here, but it seems like it. Anyway, he says, I'm going there tomorrow, see my grandparents. And it's funny, he says, I remember the old girl, grandma, she was about 76, I mean, when she kicked, you know, when she picked out. And he says, I've been wondering, he says, if they've really known. He says, another funny thing, he says, you'd have thought they'd have met me if anyone was coming over, wouldn't you? So I said, well, perhaps they didn't know. Perhaps it's only these higher-up ones who had the knowledge beforehand. So he said, well, maybe that. Anyway, since that's what's happened to me, I'm going. He says, some of these people, he says, have been here for a long time, I believe. You know, and they sort of begin to settle down there. Some are a bit difficult to deal with when they first come. He says, you seem to take it all right. So I said, well, what else can you do? He says, we told you to keep you dead. The best thing to do when you're dead, I should think, is to follow out the instructions and behave yourself. After all, you never know who's going to be judging on you and all that. I said, according to what the old Bible says, and what I understood, you got judged. So I says, get away with that. He says, no one judges you for life and make out. I think you judge yourself. You sort of, since I've been sort of reflecting, you know, going back a bit on the old past and wondering. Thinking about things, he says, I realise now, he says, many people, of course, I made many mistakes, I was a bit of a fool, you know, to myself and other people, but he says, I'm gradually beginning to see now, even though I've only been here a little while, he says, that there's no such thing as judgment, not the old fashioned idea, but the old church teaching. He says, the only thing, he says, is you judge yourself. After all, it's your conscience, he says, I've got one, so you are better, we all have. So I said, well, I've got a bit of a conscience, all that, but I said, of course, I haven't lived all that long and done all that much bad, as far as I know. That's as far as I can remember. The only thing I ever did really wrong was drowning the cat. I said, I can't think of anything else. And, once I had a pint of bitter, never paid for it, because there was a crowd in there, and he forgot about it, and I never offered it. I was feeling really terrible, which is bad, eh? So as I can remember, I said, I ain't done really bad. I mean, I ain't known some of these people. I said, if the only thing I think of being anything bad, if it is bad at all, it's not altogether my fault, because I was forced into it, it's killed a few Germans. I said, no, I said, you come to think about it, I'd put them in the same boat as myself. I said, I'm not very happy about that idea, although I realise already that it's not so bad being dead, but after all, perhaps they had a life to fulfill on earth. That matter said it all, I said. But what I feel about at the moment, I said, is the fact that I'm placed in this position. Not that I mind it, it seems, it says, but that other people who really, when you come to think about it, don't risk their lives at all. They sit back and more or less in comfort and smoke the cigars and what have you. I said, we're the ninnies, aren't we? So she was telling me, boys, she said, you don't want to worry about them finances and all the rest of it. They're all right, they'll come through all right. But what good will they do? What will they have to answer when they get hurt? You think that one crazy to me? He said, you've got an hang on your conscience, mate, but my Christ, he said, they've got a hell of a lot on there and the others that are responsible for putting us in this position. You know, I said, well, I suppose we shouldn't have any better feelings, I said. He said, no, he says, I ain't got no better feelings. But what is it that annoys me and upsets me is that these people are the cause of all this. A mere handful, you might say, compared to the untold millions who have to suffer for. They're the ones who are really the when's the bus coming on their conscience? When they get here, I would rather be in their darn shoes. He says, I said, I can climb to Greenview there, mate. I said, we'd rather buy the poor old sheep, eh? He says, you're telling me. He says, but never mind. He says, it's going to be nice. He says, I can feel that. He says, up in here, everyone's been kind and pleasant and helpful. He says, I've been looking at the table already. He says, you'll be all right anyway. So I said, well, you know, I'm going to be ready to get all this. I've had to accept the fact that I'm dead, I says, but I still find it difficult to breathe. He says, well, I had a partial get used to the idea. He says, getting used to the idea of being dead comes with the magic first, but you soon saw it come on too. And it's not bad at all, he says, I'm telling you. You really, really have everything here that you want, that's essential. Oh, he went on to, you know, things. And the other folks sitting around, they didn't say very much at all, they were a bit of a damn rock. But he says, because of course, he says, my friends, he says, they are only just setting in like you. They've only been here a very short time. And it's just when you arrived, I bet. He says, they're thinking it all out. And they've been worrying with you. One or two of them, anyway, he says, he looked at them and they looked at him and me. Everyone stands together, and he says, they're a bit concerned about the people on the other side. Cool, and I remember the man, I said, good call. I said, all about them. Isn't that terrible to think? But, you know, with all this happening, I said, I completely forgot it. He says, well, they will begin to realize what I mean. He says, but, you know, they tell me you can go back and see them if you want to. So I says, go back and see them. So she says, I said, does that mean you become a ghost then? Because they find my woman out of her life, you know. So he says, well, people say that, but he says, we can get back, you know. So I said, boy, I'd like to go back and see my people and see how they're getting on. And, well, I said, I wonder if they've heard about me being dead. So he says, well, I may not have heard yet, you know, slowly I've everything, you know, telling the relation. You know. So I said, he says, if you want to go back, he says, it can be arranged, you know. He says, one of those fellows who's in charge here, he can probably arrange it to take you back. He says, of course, it won't make you miserable. I should think, because he says, you go back then, they don't take you back, they know something. Then what? I said, that's funny you're talking about not taking you back. I remember at the time, I said, when I went over the top, and I was racing with the rest of the boys, of course, the Germans, I said, the Germans came running past me, I remember they didn't even see me. He says, that's right. He says, that's exactly what will happen. Get back to work, no one will see. They want to take them out. They shoot that bang on the wife's door. He says, if you've got a wife, he says, oh, you can bang on the old parson's door. He won't take a bloody bit of action because he says, barn is the bad out of it. So I said, good, yeah. It's a bit much, isn't it? And my point again is, they're taking notice of it. So he says, well, he says, you wait and see. Take things calmly, mate, if you're up. So I thought, well, I suppose I'll do some tolls this way. In case you've been in the army any length of time, you learn to do what you're told, otherwise you're in for it. So I thought, well, I'm in the funny predicament here, so the best thing is keep your mouth shut and listen and say, look, you know. Anyway, eventually, time came, and this friend who brought me here came over to me again. He says, I want to show you something. So I said, oh, all right, mate. So I went with him and we went outside and he took me down another street. Little houses there, very attractive they was, with little balconies and flowers. All beautiful flowers, I've never seen such flowers. And he took me down the end of this road and we came out to a big square, like a sort of street, square of the streets. And there was a big fountain playing in the middle. And I could hear music, all of us, this wonderful music. And I thought, this is really nice. It reminded me of the old days when I used to sit in the park and listen to the band. But this band was something out of the, it wasn't out of the world, it was. It was magnificent, playing away there, beautiful music. I didn't know what it was, but it's marvellous music. And I saw all these instrumentalists sitting there. And they looked real marvellous. The funny thing is, they've got uniforms on them. They've got this sort of road business. I thought, well, that looks very nice. But, I'm a little bit odd in one of them outfits, but anyway, I thought I was thinking about that now. And I thought, well, what am I wearing now? And I looked and I was wearing a suit again. I thought, oh, this is fine. And everything was going on all the same time in my mind. I was probably sort of doing. Anyway, we sat down on a bench and under a he said, we often come to sit here and listen to music, it's very pleasant. I said, it's very nice. He said, you'll find it very restful. He says, you just sit there, I'll leave you there for a little while, I'll come back for you. So, all right. So I just sat there and listened to nothing music. And I really enjoyed that. Do you like them carrying on?
We like it better.
Very interesting. And anyway, I sat there with my eyes closed, and listening to this very nice music. And then all of a sudden, I had a sort of feeling of something, someone sitting next to me. And I looked, and there was a very beautiful lady. She was very beautiful, beautiful blonde hair she had, fair, very beautiful. She looked about 19 or 20. And I was really sort of taken back. And she says, but she called me by name. That's right. So I thought, well, that's funny. She knows my name. I don't know her. So she said, are you finding it all very nice of you? I says, very nice, thank you. Miss, so she said, you don't have to call me Miss. She says, don't you know me? So I said, no, I don't know you. She says, my name is Lily. So I said, Lily, I don't know Lily. Sorry, I says, I don't want to appear rude, but I don't know you. She says, you don't know me. And yet she said, that's not surprising in a way. She said, but I'm your sister. I died when I was an infant. Good luck, I says. I remember my mother said and talked about a little girl who died and was only a few days old or something, if I remember right. And I says, but you can't be her. I says, you're grown up. So she says, that's right. She says, I'm your sister. I died when I was an infant. And I'm grown up over here. So I says, well, beats me. I says, I'm very pleased to know you and I feel quite happy knowing you, but still very puzzling to me that you should be my sister. And I never knew her, I mean. So she said, well, don't let that worry you. She says, but I'm going to look after you coming here. And she says, you come with me and I'm going to take you home. I says, home? She says, yes, home. So I says, oh. I knew I went with her. And she took me out of the square down the very broad avenue, like trees, and we branched off, and we went down a slope, and it seems to be going outside the town altogether, and we went out into the countryside, down a beautiful country road, and I could see in the distance some small houses dotted about here and there. Gradually we arrived in a small cottage place. Don't want to describe it, it was the nearest thing I'd ever seen by the way to. Well, the cottages and that I'd seen at home in England. She eventually stopped at a small place in this home little garden with a little gate and a little porch, the door, plenty of lovely flowers again, I noticed. And we went in and went into this little place and walked this little passageway on the left. Remember, was this little room, all very cozy and comfortable. Nice chairs, and I noticed there was no fireplace. I said, oh, I see you don't have fireplaces here then. She said, no, we need fireplaces because it's always warm and always pleasant. So I said, that's nice, isn't it? Don't get no rain then. So she says, no, we don't have any rain. But she says, we have dew. Sometimes strange as it may seem. So I said, well, oh, that must be nice. So she just is. So anyway, we sat there talking. She started talking about my mother and my father and brother that I had still on earth. And she said she often went to see them, and then we went to see them and me when I was on earth in infancy. And that she had been with me all through the war years. And she couldn't, she wasn't with me. She said that she could have been away before me, that she knew I'd be coming and that I'd be brought. And anyway, and I was not sent to live with her. She said, look after me. I thought, this is nice. And I thought, well, I don't know, it's all so strange. anyway, I said to him, I stayed with my sister. And perhaps I better come another time to tell you more about it from that point. You see, it was the time, I'm told the time is up.
You're very interesting.
Well, I know, I mean, the point is, I feel that I can't talk to you as intelligent as that.
I'm
just some interest to people if I sort of told you these things, you see. Anyway, I'm told the power of everything is going. That
did you live in Sydney, Sweden?
No. I must go, dear. I'm sorry, but...
I can't even meet you,